Started the recording.
All right, thank you very much. So we're good to go on recording. So I'd like to call to order the Kaiser Long Range Planning Task Force. It is Monday, October 25th, 2021. And ask Mr. Wood to please call roll.
Okay. Committee member Kathy Clark.
Here.
Committee member Elizabeth Smith.
Here.
Committee member Dan Kohler.
I am here.
Committee member Roland Herrera.
Here.
Committee member Ross Day.
Here.
Committee member Laura Reed.
Here.
Committee member Kyle Duran.
Here.
Committee member Francisco Saldivar.
Present.
Committee member Gerard Graveline.
Present.
Committee member Jonathan Thompson.
Here.
Committee member Hirsch Sangster.
Here. Go Beavs.
Hey, you're throwing me off. Committee member Ali Razuli.
Here.
Committee member Melissa Martin.
Here.
And committee member Susan London.
There she is.
Oh, we're all here.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And thank you all for making time this evening to convene as the task force. It was important for the city council to hear from a larger group regarding the prioritization and allocation of funds that are coming to us through the ARPA, American Rescue Plan Act. So with that, the first order of business will be public comment. Do we have anybody from the public who would like to address the Long Range Planning Task Force at this time? I don't have any hand up and the participants, and I see anybody making hand motions to our attention in the window here. So we will go ahead and move on then to the approval of the minutes from the Long Range Planning Task Force meeting on March 8, 2021. Were there any additions or corrections noted by any of the members? We need a motion then to approve as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Jonathan Thompson, seconded by Roland Herrera. Any further discussion? All in favor, please unmute and signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, please unmute and signify by saying no. Hearing no objection, motion passes unanimously. That takes us then to the presentation today about the preliminary census data overview. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Wood.
Thank you. Well, this is kind of a unusual circumstances to be in a census year. So this information we're going to be presenting tonight is going to kind of set the stage on the demographics and the changes that have gone on in our community over the last 10 years, and in some cases, even farther back than that. I think this is important in context of this conversation so that we can learn a little bit more about the demographics of the community. So when we come to focusing on the resources, we can better identify how to allocate those resources back out to better meet the needs of the community. I just want to remind everyone that this is still preliminary data and preliminary analysis. We still don't actually have all of the data. It's not been made available to us. And we certainly have done not done all the analyzing that we possibly could have done. This isn't the main focus of tonight's meeting. And so I anticipate there'll probably be some questions that get raised with this information. We're also going to be looking at this probably at our regular meeting when we meet in February, March time period. So we can take some questions tonight, but I don't necessarily want us to get too wrapped up in some of the details because again, it is preliminary and we're still working on some of the analysis. With that, Sue has done an excellent job doing some of the basic analysis. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Sue at this point.
Hello, I'm Sue Ramstein. I am the GIS technician for the City of Kaiser underneath the Environmental and Technical Division. My pronouns are they, them. If you have any questions for me beyond tonight about how this was conducted or anything where the information was obtained. Tim will be providing a link to this presentation, which is called a story map. At the end of the meeting, it will be available up on our GIS webpage within the gallery sometime later this week. We have a couple edits we need to make. Sorry, can you not hear me?
We're having a difficult time. Your volume is somewhat muffled.
My pronouns are they, them, by the way, not she. Please tell me if you're feeling me better.
A little bit. Which microphone on the Zoom are you using? There's something that's interfering.
I just have a podcast microphone. It's the only microphone I have. So
that's better. That was better.
Okay. To restart, I'm Sue Rancine. I am the GIS technician for the city of Kaiser. My pronouns are they, them. If you'd like to contact me about any of this information after the meeting, Tim just shared the link. You can find all that information down in the credits. That is also where you can find the email to contact me by, and also the areas where I found this data. Once more, this is preliminary. The GIS and the census data for 2020 is still coming out. Some of it will be available come December, and some of it will be available February of next year. And the report has not been published yet for the 2020 census. What you are looking at is called a story map. I'll share this with you. Everybody see that fine?
There we go.
Thank you. So what you're looking at is a story map. It's a way for us to show GIS and other data in an interactive form. So this will be available to you. And like I said, later on to the public. So it is organized with underneath the headers, population, race and ethnicity, family and households, housing, income, poverty, and then those credits is what I was talking about, where you can find me. So overall, briefly, the population for city of Kaiser has increased. Our density has also increased. The map to the right-hand side shows the differential between the 2010 and the 2020 census data and that percentage of change per area. The census data is in what is called block groups, where the ACS, the American Community Survey, is in track. So these areas do extend outside the Kaiser City limits. So unless noted otherwise, like over here, we're looking at these block groups or tracks. So please take that into account whenever you look at this data. So overall total population has increased. Also our density has increased. Our population has increased at a steady rate throughout the census years from 1990, which is the first census year for city of Kaiser, since they were not included as a city in the 1980 census, all the way on to 2020. As you can see, we've had a steady set of growth. If in each of these sections, when you look at this on your own time due to the limitations we have today, we also have comparisons of what Kaiser is compared to Oregon and the US in these handy little bar graphs to the side. Our overall age of our city has gotten older, the average age being in the 40s right now, whereas in 2010, it was a little bit over 39 years old. And most of the population is in that 18 plus demographic. With race and ethnicity, overall, Kaiser has become more diverse since the 1990s, with the white population decreasing and the Hispanic population showing the greatest increase for those that are people of color. We've also seen an increase in our Asian population, and we have also seen a change in our people that define themselves as multiracial. That may be due to the change in how the census conducts surveys for multiracial people or more people actually identify as multiracial. Overall, our foreign population has also decreased. And if you'd like to take a closer look at how these demographics for single race populations within Kaiser break down, you can look at these maps here. There will be a map for each racial group studied by the US Census. The first one I'm pulling up is for the white single racial group, the comparison of 2010 to 2020, and that percentage of change and that distribution of change. As you can see, for white, an overall decrease within the city of Kaiser. Whereas most of our population growth has been in the north to northeast region, and some of these racial demographics do actually show this. Our household numbers have increased. So according to the US Census, a household is one or more people. So that's a family group, is one or more people living together and sharing that housing area, versus a housing unit is a livable structure that is non-mobile. So this includes cabins, condos, houses, rentals, anything of that sort, as long as it's not mobile. Our number of households has increased, not proportional to our overall population increase. And the average household size has also increased. We've also seen a change in what languages people speak. We've had an increase in those who speak English only and a decrease in those who speak Spanish with another language, usually English. And overall, the map on the side shows our distribution of those who are bilingual with English, bilingual meaning that they speak any other language with English. So we've gotten a little bit more diverse in some areas with our language demographics. We have had an increase in those who speak other languages that are not Spanish or English. And that's some more of that data that we can break down in the future, but we don't have right now. Kaiser is actually being pretty good. We're a little bit more bilingual than Oregon itself. We've also seen a decrease in those who are identified as disabled, and we've seen a decrease in those without health insurance. So that's an overall increase in those who do have health insurance. Education-wise, we've seen an increase in those who have a high school diploma or higher for the overall population. This map right here will show you our general area of enrollment for K-12. And this chart right here will show you those numbers for who's enrolled and who has what type of educational degree. Kaiser is, I was able to get information for the first 2020 tracking of those who have a computer within their household. About 95% of people have a computer in their household. This does not state how old that computer is or what type of computer that is. And overall, 88%+ of the population has access to internet. That is access to internet, whether it is DSL, Wi-Fi, or dial-up through a mobile or stationary device such as a desktop, tablet, or smartphone. For housing, we have an overall occupancy of about 96% of all our housing units are occupied. So we have a very dense population within with limited areas for people to grow into is one way that can be described, or can be described another way with further analysis. Number of housing units did increase, but not proportional to our population or our household density increase. Those who rent did decrease versus those who own their households, their home units. And towards the right side, this map shows those total housing units availability and where that distribution changed. Once more, we see an increase in housing unit availability in the north, northeast. This is in, you can also see that's where population is also growing within area. Not necessarily trying to drive correlation there, but possibly happening. The median household value is around $300,000, whereas a recent look at Zillow's number for October 2021, Zillow is a selling housing unit company. They are stating that the average typical home value right now as of 2020 is about $400,000, with a 21% increase seen in housing value between 2019 to 2020. So we did have a large increase in the cost of housing. Housing, as we will see when we look at income, did not proportionally change to how much people are economically making. Rent also increased quite a bit, with a 20% increase between 2019 and 2020, according to Zumper's numbers. Zumper is also a housing sale and rental unit company like Zillow. This map here shows us the area of who own the house they are occupying versus those who rent the house they are occupying. If they house, I mean housing unit, versus where areas of vacancy are occurring. Between 2010 and 2020, we saw an increase in those who rent proportionally in predominance versus those who own in the south to northeastern region. And we've seen an increase in vacancy across the area accordingly, and an increase in those who own their home accordingly. This map's a little complicated, so please take your time in looking at it. And if you'd like to see some of the work we did for the JEDI project, we broke down the real market value of our housing in January of 2021. So areas where there are darker colorations are the more expensive housing units. This includes rentals and houses. That's something to note down the southern region where you have you might be looking at a rental area versus a housing area. So overall, quite a diversity of housing costs. And just to give you an idea, Kaiser is 69% proportional to the zoning area of being residential versus other zoning use types. So we're mostly houses. Income did increase. It did not increase proportionally to the cost of housing. Overall, with distribution change, Kaiser did see an increase in value within its household populations. In most of Kaiser, we did not see a proportional increase in the southern area here where you see white. And the total population did increase in those who are employed. About 95% of our population is employed. This employment just designates somebody has a job. It does not designate whether they are working multiple jobs, are working part-time, full-time, term, or otherwise. So somebody may be working only a couple hours a week, but still considered part of that overall employment number. For poverty levels, Kaiser did see an overall decrease of the total population living in poverty, especially with those under the age of 18, aka children, and those within the working age group 18 to 64. We did see an increase of those within the 65 plus or senior citizen group that did experience an increase in living in poverty. And if you would like to know what living in poverty is stated as for household group, I have the numbers right here. There's also a link in the credits to what that is termed as by the federal government. So if you would like to compare, the map on the right shows that overall total population that is living in poverty and the map in the sidebar that you can open shows where our under 18, our children group is living in poverty. So overall, Kaiser is doing for the total population better than Oregon with those living in poverty, but it is greater in those in the children group that are living in poverty and under for the other two major age demographics. This is the credit area. Each of these that have an underline will link you to where I access this information and broke it down by. Some of the information is only going to be available at the current moment in GIS form. If you would like to see some quick numbers for City of Kaiser, please use the quick facts for Kaiser. That can also allow you to look at other city areas. And if you'd like to see any of the profiles for the United States or Kaiser, you can look at the US profiles or the Oregon profile. And if you would like to know where to find the poverty guidelines, that is the ASPE poverty guideline. If you'd like to contact me, you can contact me through this link here. This email here, sorry, it's not a link. GISinfo@kaiser.org. And once more, I believe Tim already put the link into the chat. If you need that, please poke him. And this will become available later this week once we make some edits that we noticed. And now we will open up the floor for questions. Tim will be directing the questions to me. And we'll be maintaining the time for these questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. At this point, again, this is just a preliminary. We'll come back with more information during the long range task force planning meeting at our normal time. Task force member Herrera, you have a question?
Actually, it's more of a comment. When we talk about census, historically, as we all know, Latinos have been underrepresented. While it's gone up, this is my fifth census, this last one. Well, it's gone up and it's done better, but there's always a small percentage of the Latino population that doesn't want to be counted for obvious reasons. And working with that, with the organization that I work with, we feel like they got a great increase. In Oregon, it went up 31% Latino population. And so that should be reflected in any way. But just as a side note, typically Latino folks are undercounted, I should say. So thank you very much. By the way, that was really well done. Good job.
Thank you. NPR recently did, not promoting any group or anything. I was reading up on other census stuff and I noticed that issue due to multiracial groups, especially, and Latino Hispanic, Latinx proportion not being counted properly, also Black and African American population. NPR recently did a very good write up on that. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
I'm not seeing anyone else. Okay. Well, again, more to come. We have a lot of information to process through and Sue has been doing an excellent job at it. So with that, I guess we can go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda, if that's okay with you folks.
Then I will leave.
Okay, thank you, Sue.
Mr. Cole, I had a question. Dan?
Thank you. I just wondered, this information, is it on our website, the city website?
It is not yet, but it will be. We wanted to save it at least till we got through this meeting so we didn't get a lot of surprise questions and things coming before we were ready for this. So we will put it out there and the link is available and I can make sure to email it to all the task force members.
And thank you for putting the link in the chat. I have a larger screen. I was able to throw it up on there while and track it during the presentation, which was very helpful. This is very powerful information. And again, thank you for bringing this to us. So we'll be able to use this information to better understand our the complexity of our community. All right, to the American Rescue Plan Act overview, Mr. Wood.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. And this is probably going to be a review for some of you folks and new information for the rest of you. As Mayor Clark indicated, we had a meeting back in August with just the council members as a work session. And we thought, you know, this probably makes more sense to come to this group so that we could chart together a path forward for how to use the ARPA funds that the city will be receiving. So with that, the rest of the meeting, I kind of want to focus on four different areas. First will be a quick overview of the ARPA overview. Next one will be important deadlines that we need to keep in the front of our minds, and then some potential projects, and then talk a little bit about the next steps as we move forward. So with that, the ARPA stands for American Rescue Plan Act. It came out in March of 2021. And this is the 2021 version of the CARES Act that happened in 2020. Feels kind of like it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. The city has been awarded about $8.8 million that we can use to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic and start the rebuilding process. The important thing here is when we look at this is there's multiple streams of revenue coming out. In the upper left hand corner, the stimulus checks, that's the checks that some of us folks probably have received from the federal government. In the lower middle section where it says education, that's money that's been directed to the schools. If you look at the top, the expanded tax credits, those are some of the child care tax credits that you're seeing. And there's also the Payroll Protection Act credits and grant funds that come out through that. So the message here is that it's a $1.9 trillion plan. And there's multiple ways that the revenue is going to be coming to our communities. And the money that we're seeing is just one of those revenue streams. Unfortunately, this is a lot of one-time money that has deadlines associated with it. And so the challenge is to try to limit ourselves to projects, initiatives that are more one-time type of things, so we don't get into a situation where when we're at the end of the commitment level, commitment time period, and we have to identify alternate sources of funding for some of these projects. So like I said, there is several different ways the money is going to come to our communities. There's going to be aid that comes directly to us, territories, tribal type governments. That's what we're going to be focusing most of our time on. There's also money that comes directly to individuals, businesses, organizations. And then there's pass-through money that goes to the state and then out to different areas. What we need to be cognizant of tonight is to maximize how we use our resources. We need to make sure that we're not overlapping on areas where other streams of revenue can come into play. Specifically, we'll start talking about, say, rental assistance or utility assistance. There's already some federal and state programs in place that are kind of covering those right now. So for us, we kind of need to take a wait and see approach with some of those things. If we feel like that's going to be something that's important for our community, maybe earmark it for future years, and we can circle back to it and wait until the state and the county and the federal money dries up first. So there's a little bit of gamesmanship to it just to make sure that we can maximize how we can benefit our community. As we look at the allocation, the state and local fiscal recovery funds, it's $350 billion that's going out to cities. And some of that is going directly to cities from the federal government. Some of it is going to the states and then from the states to the cities. We're part of what they call the non-entitlement group. We get our funds directly from the state, who gets their funds from the government. So we're kind of a pass-through from the state. Interesting note, we are the largest non-entitlement city in the state of Oregon. So I guess there's something to being the 13th or 14th largest, depending on where the population numbers line up at. There's going to be a lot of money that flows into this area. You can see Marion County got almost $68 million, City of Salem, $34 million. We got our $8.8 million. We also, for the folks that were back with us in August, we did get an allocation. State Representative Bill Post allocated $700,000 of ARPA-related state funds directly to the City of Kaiser. And unfortunately, that kind of has a much quicker deadline for us that we're going to have to work through. We have about a year and a half to get those funds really into play for us. So we're going to have to be pretty quick on the uptake as far as projects goes. Marion County also got $10 million in addition to the $68 million previously. They got $10 million specifically for rental assistance. So again, we wouldn't necessarily want to spin up a rental assistance program really quick, because we want to see how well Marion County does distributing their funds first. And that way we can use our dollars for something that would benefit some other area that's not being addressed so far. On top of this, there's a few other programs that are in place. I know this Salem-Kaiser School District, they're getting close to $100 million. So that's a big number. Also, when we're talking about other avenues of revenue, the state is going to, the Oregon Housing and Community Services Group is going to be doing a low-income household water assistance program. They're still working through the details of that program, but that's going to be happening in January. At least that's when they anticipate the kickoff for that will be. So those are some of the things that we need to think about as we start deciding how to allocate some of these dollars out. So like I was saying, the ARPA funds are similar to the CARES Act grant that we got in 2020. Back then we got 1.1 million. So this is almost eight times as large as what we got in 2020 that we have to use to the best of our ability. They're intended to provide support in responding to the impact of COVID-19 and also our efforts to contain COVID-19. And there are some restrictions that we'll have to deal with as far as how we can use the money. But really, is if we keep those things in the forefront, we'll be fine as far as meeting all the requirements. Within the actual guidance itself, there's four specific categories. One is to respond to the public health emergency or its negative economic impacts. That was the big thing with the CARES Act grant. This gives us the ability to provide assistance, put in infrastructure that we need to prevent the spread of COVID-19. It also, this act allows us to provide premium pay to eligible workers. Eligible workers would be grocery store clerks, those kind of folks that were working throughout the pandemic to make sure that essential supplies and resources were coming through. It's really aimed at some of the lower income types of jobs. So just going through the motions, when I think about it, some of our police departments and possibly the folks down the street at the fire district probably would not be eligible because they do make above the minimum that's required for this type of a program. So it really is geared at the clerks at the grocery stores and those doing transportation, trucking kind of things. So that can be something that we could potentially look at going into. This act also provides for reduction in revenues that the city
experiences. Can I press pause for a second? Councillor Kohler had a question on your last comment.
Thank you, Mayor Clark. Now, Tim, what is that threshold for assistance for workers?
I was scared you were going to ask that question, so I don't have that right in front of me, but I can get it to you.
I appreciate that. Sorry, my friend.
It's a fairly low threshold. I think it's, you can't provide income higher than 150% of the median income or something like that. It's kind of a crazy formula driven, but it's really aimed at some of the lower income type of jobs.
Thank you.
Good question. Thanks.
The one thing that was really missing with the CARES Act was the impact on cities from reduction in revenues. As we've talked about in the past, our event center got hammered really hard. We actually had zero revenue in fiscal 2021. And also our gas tax revenues got hit significantly as people were staying at home, not driving about. So those were two areas that really got hit by our quarantines and the lockdowns. So this act gives us a little bit of leeway to be able to recover some of those funds. This is a formula-driven event, and based on the preliminary calculations, I originally calculated $1.5 million. I actually think it's going to be closer to $2 million when all is done and said for the not a lot of restrictions in how we can use this type of revenue. It really is meant to offset some of the reduction in services across the board for the cities. And the final area is to make investments into water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. They're really trying to amp up a lot of the people that have been denied services in the past. We're pretty fortunate here in Kaiser that we have been doing a pretty good job overall, as you can see in the demographic data, of being able to provide resources. There are some things that we can't use any of this stuff for. Specifically, we can't do any pay down on our PERS obligations. This makes me mad, but the accountant in me. We can use it as far as regular payroll type deposits. So if we're backfilling, say a police officer was out on COVID-19 and we could reimburse the salary and wages that we lost there, including retirement benefits. We can make those payments under this, but we couldn't make a specific deposit just to PERS to pay down our unfunded obligations. We also can't use it to make debt payments. We can't use it to settle any type of litigation, and we can't use it to reduce taxes, property taxes, and we can't use it to fund financial reserves. And if it was left to me, it would all go into one big financial reserve, and it'd be amazing. And I would look at it every day, but yeah.
Nope.
I'm an accountant, but I got this way by hard work. So some important deadlines that we need to keep in the front of our minds. Again, this came into effect March 11th, 2021. In August, we received the first down payment of about $4.4 million. A year from August, we're going to receive the second down payment. These numbers actually may go up a little bit higher. There's a few cities throughout Oregon that decided to decline getting some of the ARPA funds. So their money gets reallocated back into the big pool. So we'll probably be closer to $4.9 million when everything is said and done for. We have to have everything committed by December 31st, 2024. So that means during our budget process in 24-25, we're going to have everything pretty much said for where we're going to be spending it. We do get a little bit of time to spend it, though. Everything has to be spent by December 31st, 2026. So we commit, and then we have to spend. And that gets us to the 26-27 annual budget process. And at that point, we'll have allocated all of our funds out and spent it all. So we have a little bit of time to really decide where we want to spend this, but we're going to need to start moving forward with a few projects. I didn't include the money that we had from State Representative Bill Post. That is allocated in this biennium. So I believe we have about a year and a half to spend that. So we're going to need to get moving fairly quickly as far as getting that money into play.
Mr. Wood, I thought those were earmarked projects.
They were in the beginning, but it ended up that they did not get earmarked when they made their final appropriations. So we do have the obligation. Part of this was a pass through to give some funds to CASA. So the total allocation, when you look at the budget that got approved, is $850,000. We have to give $150,000 to CASA of Marion County, and the remaining $700,000. As long as it meets the criteria for the ARPA funds, we can use it for that purpose.
But there's a different deadline for obligating those funds?
Correct. We have to get them from the state before their biennium is up.
go, are we going to kind of break those conversations into two, because those have a different deadline and we already had a conversation about how they might be obligated, unless you're coming back with a different recommendation than what we talked about with Rep Post? Is that kind of a, I don't want to conflate all this unless there's an opportunity for leverage.
Sure. I actually have a plan for spending some of the money.
Of course you do.
So I know. So when we get to that point, I'll kind of lay out some recommendations, although you folks can go ahead and go a different direction if you so choose. So moving on to some of the projects that we've identified so far. This may be a little bit small on your screen. Is it too unreadable at this point? So I'll kind of blow it up a little bit more. So the basis of this list of projects really is the list of projects that we had from the Long Range Task Force. We've been putting together a list of things that we wish we could do if we only had the money to do it. So that was the beginning of this list. And then as the city staff, we went through and said, okay, is there anything else that we can add that would meet the criteria of the ARPA funds? Along the way, we've had two outside groups also make requests of us. We've had the Kaiser Heritage Foundation and the library folks make a request that we think about contributing some of the money over to them so that they can add a librarian and also get some seed money as far as a building goes. The other area that we got a request from the outside is incentives for childcare providers. I guess there's a desert of childcare providers in the area. And one of the restrictions is finding available space that meets the certain building requirements. I guess there's a requirement for a certain sprinkler system that you have to have if you're over a certain size of daycare. So the request was that we would consider providing some of these funds to do some leasehold or building improvements. So those are the two areas that we got requests from the outside. The rest are based off of staffing discussions and also the list of items from the Long Range Planning Task Force of things that we wish we could do if we had the money. So I'll kind of go through them really quickly and feel free to stop me if there's any questions. So the first one.
Tim, can I jump in real quick? This is all illustrative. I don't want anybody going, oh my gosh, we're going to be doing this tomorrow. Some of them have been put in here and they're not vetted out. This is just illustrative. So I want, please keep that in mind, that this is the start of the conversation, and there'll be a filtering and a sorting of the things that can go now, the things that can go later, and the things we got to think about. So just if we could frame it that way, so you don't go, oh my gosh, we're going to do this tomorrow. That would be a terrible headline and not helpful.
Yes, this is truly a brainstorming session for the most part. The areas where you see...
Councilor Herrera has his hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Councilor Herrera. I didn't see. Please, go ahead.
That's quite right. And clarify this for me. I'm sure you said it. I've had issues. This particular list, the staff came up with this one? Or is this a long-range planning? The next one?
Correct. The majority of this list staff came up with.
Okay, now staff is who? Pretty much city staff.
Correct. Department head group, primarily.
Department heads. Okay. Thank you very much.
And I also would add that we've had a couple of work sessions talking about staff resources and you know, needs that our city has. You know, the codification of our ordinances is one of those that we talked about when city council did a work session with the with city staff. So this some of these I recognize from that conversation, and they weren't a wish list of, ooh, now we could do this, but there was some background on a lot of these that had to do with that conversation in prior years. And if anybody has been on the budget committee for more than 2 years, every time you heard status quo, there's probably something in here that had to do with that.
That is correct. With this list, we did try to, I went back and the U.S. Treasury Department is responsible for administrating this grant program. They put together an FAQ. So we went back and I tried to line up as much of these to the specific FAQ number that says it's eligible to be used for this purpose. This won't be the final time that we do that because there is a lot of legal requirements. If we mess this up, we'll have to repay some of this money. And we don't want to go down that path because that'd be a career limiting move for me. So when we get to the point where we are starting to allocate some money out, we'll go back and double check and make sure we've dotted all our I's and crossed our T's, just to make sure that we're all on even ground here. Then we tried to go through and identify if this is a one-time or if there's ongoing costs associated with it. Then who this impacts, is it local or is it a regional project? Also, if there's other sources of funding or partners that we could go into business with. And then also the residents impacted. And then also if this lines up with a city council goal or one of the work plan items. I thought that was important if we have those goals out there that we can start moving the needle forward on some of those. And the areas where there's no dollar amount listed yet, a lot of these are kind of a choose your own adventure. We can allocate as much or as little as we want to some of these based off of the need. And some of these, we're just gonna have to start something if we wanna go that direction and see what the demand is like. Say the utility rent and mortgage assistance. Once we've used all of Marion County's money, we'll have to figure out how much of a need is still out there. And we can assess that accordingly. So some of the things that the city staff has identified is we could potentially enhance the air filtration system in city buildings, specifically City Hall. We're at, 12 years now with our existing HVAC system. There may be some improvements that we could look at adding to the filtering system to take COVID-19 out of the air and other particulates out of the air. So that's one area that we could look at. We've also identified, if you haven't been in City Hall lately, we have done a remodel at the front counter area. There's a few things that we want to go back and try to address better. So there's some corrections that we feel like we need to make. One of them being like the sound holes. If you're trying to talk to someone at the front desk and you're on the other side, it can get a little challenging just because it's not an amplified sound hole. So we want to look at adding some of those types of things. In the past, we've done some community business grants. We could spin that up again as well. Looks like we got a question from Jonathan Thompson.
Thanks, Tim. On that community business grant, something to put on there is we talked about the money from Representative Post. Senator Thatcher also allocated some money to the chambers in her district for this. We haven't got the strings yet on how that's going to go. But it would definitely be something where if we couldn't work together, we definitely don't want to work at cross purposes on that. So as that rolls out, we'd be, if this gets legs, we'd be putting on my chamber hat. We obviously want to work with the city on that.
Okay, good. Good to know. Business Oregon also has some community business grants out there right now. So there are some resources currently available. I thought I heard Marion County had some money as well. So that would be one of those where we probably need to sit and wait until we figure out what some of our other partners are doing. Utility rent mortgage assistance. During the last go around, we provided about $300,000 of utility rent and mortgage assistance. And that went really, really fast. I was cutting checks to our partner agencies almost weekly just to keep them funded. So there potentially could be some opportunity there. As we've talked about before tonight, there is going to be a low-income water housing assistance program that's going to be rolled out by the state in January. So we may want to wait and see what that looks like. And also Marion County does have their rent assistance at this point. Another area we could look at is homelessness assistance. I was excited to hear about the $3.7 million that the Mid-Willamette Valley Homeless Alliance has received. We could partner up and potentially divert some dollars that direction as well.
And if I might, that was just one of two There was another one that was $5.5 million for Morgan Housing and Community Services for street outreach, shelters, and so forth. So there are ample opportunities that are evolving for partnership. But if we're looking at this fiscal year, it won't be ready, but this might be something for the long range plan task force looking ahead to 22-23, may have some opportunities for partnering.
Okay, good. Good to know. We can use the funds for public safety payroll expenses for the time that they actually dedicate to responding to COVID-19 health emergencies. So we could partner with the Kaiser Fire District and start keeping track of the time that we're actually spending on those type of issues and reimburse those type of costs. One of the areas, I guess, put a little asterisk next to police cadet radios. This is a request from the police department. I feel like this is a safety issue. Right now, the cadets are sharing radios and probably not so good with an airborne kind of situation. So that's one I'd like to kind of move to the top of the pile, just because it is a safety type of issue. The next one, the code enforcement truck. This is also somewhat of a safety issue. We're currently doing code enforcement with a Ford Explorer, I believe. So we are throwing contaminated stuff into the back of an Explorer where we do have a driver. I would like to see if we can move forward with getting some kind of a truck. So when there is a cleanup of contaminated stuff, that stuff can go in the back. Also, we do send out multiple people when they do code enforcement compliance stuff. And it'd be nice to have two vehicles so they're not necessarily riding together and sharing. Carrying is not sharing in the situation. So, and then like I mentioned before, incentives for childcare providers. This would be leasehold or building improvements. That would be something that we could potentially consider. And again, this one came from an outside group. The next two, like I mentioned before, the library. They're looking for assistance in getting a part-time librarian and also looking for assistance in getting some starter money for possibly a library building. I'm a big library fan and I like the idea. It'd be a lot easier to go to a Kaiser library than to the Salem library. But the other area that we could potentially do some work with is if we wanted to spin up a vaccine incentive program, we could allocate dollars for that if we so choose. It may be a little bit late in the game as far as providing those type of incentives at this point, but it is an option. So moving on to the next category, where we've seen some revenue loss, these are some projects that we've identified. And these are things, this area gives us a lot of latitude as far as how we spend the money. I would put another asterisk next to the ADA street ramp improvements. Our street fund got hammered really hard with the loss of gas tax. This, by allocating these dollars, we'd be able to get the street fund back up and running and moving forward with our resurfacing projects. And one of the requirements, if we do street resurfacing rebuilding, we have to make sure that we do ADA accessible street ramps. And I think that's an important project to do.
Quick question on that one. Would that be, because I noticed in our agenda, we're going to talk about the things that we need to do a supplemental for this year versus next year. Is this one that we would earmark or note for the 22-23 budget? Or is that something that we could actually do now and get ready for the construction season when it begins late spring?
This would be one that I'd hope we can move forward with sooner rather than later. The ones I'm having you put asterisks next to, if I get your consent and approval to move forward, I'd like to bring back a supplemental budget adjustment at our next available opportunity. These would help us to get back on track with some of our programs as a city. So.
And then we got a question from Ali Rasuli.
Yeah, I have a question. The ADA street ramp improvements and like sidewalk infill, would potentially any money come from the infrastructure bill that will most likely pass that would come to the city?
Potential for that, yes. Okay. I haven't looked at the details of the infrastructure, but it very well could apply to some of this. A lot of times they do restrict it to state infrastructure, so the I-5s of the world and some major artery kind of things. I don't know, I don't want to put, Bill Lawyer, are you on, I don't want to put you on the spot if you have any more insight into the Infrastructure Act, but there is potential that we could use some funds for that.
Yeah, I don't have any insight on the infrastructure bill at this point, Tim. I have not looked into the potential use of those funds. I'm kind of waiting until it does get finalized and passed, because I suspect things will change up until the last minute before it's passed.
I would tend to agree with you.
And I might point out that these might, like Tim, you were pointing out, that might be for the larger streets. You know, what we're talking about is the neighborhood streets and corners, and that can sometimes that's have a slightly different color of money.
Mm-hmm.
Hirsch Sangster has a hand up. Unmute. Can't hear you. Try again.
There we go. Traffic safety has been talking about the infill and sidewalks for the last 2 years. And as COVID has hit our community, we have seen more and more people out walking and using that form. And a lot of parts of Kaiser are sidewalk poor. So any attempt to try to fill in with sidewalks and stuff, I think it would help not only the ambiance of the community, but also the health of the community for safer walking, et cetera.
And can I pile on to that a little bit? We have the gaps, but we also have the sections that are completely destroyed, worn out. And we've had that, we've got some programs where we might be able to ramp to increase them or something, and have that conversation about how to do that as well. It's been on council goals for a very long time, and it's just a matter of the money. So this would be another area that would have huge community benefit.
And the community could actually see it being done.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I would agree with that. Looks like, Bill, do you have your hand up? No?
I do, Tim. I do, thank you. I just wanted to mention, too, for everybody's benefit, that I have looked into the ARPA funds, and for the true ARPA funds, there are no transportation elements eligible for funding within that money. So just know that for the revenue replacement is a different animal, but a project like sidewalk, we were talking sidewalk, that's not eligible for the ARPA funds at this point. So all that money, something like that, would have to come from the infrastructure plan, infrastructure bill, or other city funds.
Mm-hmm. We'll keep plugging away. But with the street fund replenishing, would that have strings, because it's a gap in our it's revenue loss? Would we be able to allocate that according to our repair and maintenance schedule?
Yes, that's my understanding. A revenue replacement, that goes right into the street fund to be used for any purposes the city has needs to use it for.
Which could include sidewalks.
Yes, potentially.
Okay. We got a couple of whoppers coming up, Wheatland being one of them. All right.
So moving on, we're looking at adding an on-site police evidence and vehicle storage. Right now, when we have certain cases with evidence, we're required to save some of that stuff for 75 years-ish, specifically vehicles. So we get vehicles that are in our parking lot that have been sitting there a long time and they're starting to get damaged in the weather. So the police would like to put in a storage structure in their parking lot area that they can move some of this stuff so it's at least out of the weather. So that's one thing that they've been looking at, and that's been on our list for a little while. The next thing would be hardware, software for the modernization of cybersecurity and protection of critical infrastructure. We do have some network assets that we need to replace that are beyond their service life that we've been milking for, like we do, we get the most benefit out of all of our assets that we can. So we have a few of those that need to be replaced. So that would be another one that I'd probably put an asterisk next to of things that we potentially would really benefit us to move forward with sooner rather than later. And that would also include the telemetry system for our water system. So that would be a good thing to protect our water assets as well. Next item would be sidewalk infill, as we've been talking about. That's been, again, a long-term council goal, and we've been chatting about it for a long time. So it'd be nice to see some forward motion on that. And we could use the ARPA funds up to the $2 million of our revenue loss that we've calculated. So there is some opportunity there. Next one would be the codification of our city ordinances. We're one of the few cities that don't have a codified ordinance, and that would be good to move forward on as well.
Yesterday.
Moving on to the next page. We do have some other software kind of things that we've been looking at. NeoGov or something similar to it to manage our recruitment process. And we've been looking at that for a few years. Some kind of a budget and reporting software. We're looking at something that can be more transparent and integrate with our website so that folks can get a much better insight into how we spend the money. Next one, police parking lot security fence. I do see this one somewhat of a safety issue. Right now there's a keypad that all the officers are touching every time they go in and out of the parking lot. And it'd be nice to get to an automated where they just wave their badge in front of it so they're not all touching the same keypad. The police had a few other things that didn't make it into the budgeting process for 21-22. They'd like to add a second evidence refrigerator. They'd like to add a temporary evidence lockers, put some shelving in their gun room, and have an outside evidence cover area. So again, those were things that didn't make it into the last year's budget and were added to the wish list moving forward. Also, we've talked about for a few years, looking at the street lighting districts. This is one I'm kind of excited about, although I think we probably need to sit on it for a little while until we do some more GIS data analysis, so we can lock down exactly where and who would be benefiting from adding streetlights if it's on the city's dime, and how we might work that program.
And I might point out that that is also a potential partnership with the Marion County Assessor's Office, where they've done consolidations for unincorporated areas that are of the same size as Kaiser. They've done two of them. Mm-hmm. So that would also simplify and make it more transparent. So it's a good conversation to have for a potential partnership.
Yep, I would agree. Moving on to the next one, street reconstruction, resurfacing. This one we could spend all $8.8 million if we wanted to. Unfortunately, again, it's limited to the revenue replacement dollars that we have. So if we get to the final budget year and we don't know what to spend our money on, this will be the catch-all. Until that point, I think we probably need to wait and see what the infrastructure package looks like before we start allocating a lot of dollars that way. Another area that we've been looking at is community center and city hall storage additions. We don't really have a lot of storage, especially for the event center area. It would be nice to do some kind of a remodel to build in a little bit more storage. Next one would be, we have some pergolas outside of City Hall and the police department. Those two we're kind of looking at doing this year. as far as replacing them. They've got some weather structural type of damage that we need to take care of. And again, that's one that we've been looking at for a while. We're also looking at upgrading the electrical charging station and potentially adding another one as we start moving into the hybrid electric vehicle market. That would be something to keep at the forefront as we see the demographics of vehicles start to change. Also looking at a potential refresh of our website. We've had the same site for about 6-7 years now, and we're to the point where there's been a few changes out in the market, and I think we need to adopt those type of changes and move our site forward again. And so that's something we could potentially look at. We've also had a skate park camera system on the wish list for a while. So here it is showing up if we wanted to move forward with something with that. Like we talked about, the premium pay to essential workers, that's a category all by its own, and we could do however much or as little as we want to with that. And again, that's for the lower income type of folks that have been working throughout the pandemic. Moving on, the Meadows Pump Station, you can go ahead and put an asterisk next to this one as well. This is a bigger project. This is the type of project that's specifically laid out as far as water, sewer, broadband infrastructure type of projects. So it'd be a perfect project. It's on the long-term goal plan for the council, also part of the water master plan. So this kind of meets all of the boxes as we think about it. And all of the residents in Kaiser would benefit, anyone who's connected to the water system. I'm just doing a rough calculation. It doesn't necessarily make sense looking at it at a per resident basis. However, per household, each household will save about $71, which is not a lot, but it does add up. And this would be something that everyone would receive benefits for the next 20, 30 years. So this would be definitely a game changer. It would help us complete the master plan for the water system. Because of the longer planning process and the bidding and that type of thing, I think it would make sense to move forward with this sooner rather than later. I'd also like to propose that we take the $700,000 of Bill Post's money allocated to this project along with $300,000 of ours and get it moving forward, just so we make sure that we utilize all of the Bill Post's funds quicker and sooner rather than later. The waterline main replacements. Again, this will be a catch-all. We could spend all $8.8 million on this if we so choose. So when the time comes, if we start running out of project ideas, this is one that we can always fall back to. We could also look at extending the Wi-Fi broadband access in Kaiser. I've had a few meetings with our Comcast representative, and really there's not a lot of opportunity for us to do that. The map is pretty well covered as far as Kaiser goes. We have a little bit of area up in the northwest corner of Kaiser that doesn't have access to the Wi-Fi broadband area. Although we could look at doing some things like adding Wi-Fi in the parks or a few things like that, but not a lot of opportunity. But if that's something that you folks want us to move forward with investigating, we can certainly do that. The final one on the list was looking at some kind of a regional sewer system capital improvement project. We could partner with the city of Salem and all the other agencies, cities that are part of the regional sewer system. I did reach out to the city of Salem, and at this point, they don't have any projects that they're allocating ARPA funds to related to sewer. However, they would happily take our money if we wanted to give it to them. So those are the lists that we've generated internally and also from the two groups outside of the city. I guess I would open it up if there's any additional thoughts that you folks have, any other additional projects that come to mind.
So before we go into those, I see Jonathan, you put your hand up. And in response to, again, what we talked about earlier, the city council did have a work session with staff, and a lot of these were discussed, or at least some concepts around partnerships, backfill of lost revenues, broadband, water, sewer, et cetera, public safety. So a lot of these things, this is not just a, this is the result of ongoing conversations and a number of these projects, all of you are recognizing going, yeah, I remember this one. So just keep that in mind. Jonathan.
Thank you, Mayor. Tim, I've just quickly, the scariest word on this list for me is ongoing. Using one-time funds for projects that are going to go beyond 2026 makes me incredibly nervous. And I'm not picking on the library per se, because I'm a big fan of libraries as well. And I think it would be great. But it looks to me like one of the recommendations here is funding a librarian. And that might be a very worthwhile use of this money if we identify how to fund it going past 2026. So anything that has ongoing on it, I would really like to see what the funding sources are past 2026. Otherwise, it makes me pretty nervous.
Okay. Yep, we can definitely look at that. There are grant opportunities out there. So we could potentially look at alternate sources, but I agree 100% with you. If there's ongoing, we have to figure out a way to make that pencil out into the future past.
Right, past and because, year. Yeah, because the library is so cool, I also don't wanna be the group that cut the library after 4 years. So I don't wanna get down, be that group, so.
Yep.
I would also like to point out, because it was mentioned earlier, the request regarding a library in Silver did not come from the Kaiser Heritage Foundation. It also didn't come from the Kaiser Community Library Board. This is a group that's working with the library, a lot of community folks, many of whom are connected with but not representing the Heritage Foundation, on developing, you know, a framework for this kind of step forward. And very boldly and intelligently asked, said, is this a possibility? And so this would be a conversation that would have to be fleshed out. This is not ready to go. Although there are people who would like it to go yesterday. So I will give them that. And I love libraries too. Don't get me wrong, but this is something, you're right. This has to have some, you have to think the whole thing through. Rosse.
Thank you. So there was a, discussion last time about leveraging the funds by combining with other jurisdictions. I was just wondering if we've had any conversations with anyone about that, and if so, where those are headed.
Good question. I did reach out to the city of Salem, and they're. My impression was there was really not a lot of interest in moving forward with anything on a joint basis at this point. I have not reached out to anyone else. So I do think there is some opportunity probably that we could, especially when you start dealing with the topics of homelessness and those kind of things, I definitely think there's some opportunities.
Yeah, Ross, you had another question?
Follow up? I did. So on the issue of homelessness, and Mayor Clark, you're gonna know this better than anyone. Well, maybe not. Are we allowed to partner with, you know, either local charities, nonprofits, or the Mid-Willamette Valley Homeless Alliance on some of this stuff, or are we prevented from doing something like that? I don't know if I'm asking a good question or not, but can we partner with essentially private entities on some of this?
Well, just for clarification, the Homeless Alliance is not a private entity. So it is a continuum of care which is federally recognized and can be a collaborative applicant and a fiscal agent for federal funds. Mr. Wood.
Sure, yeah, a good question. We definitely can partner with other agencies, especially if they're receiving ARPA funds, as long as all of the requirements of how the funds are used are met. We can do a pass through to another entity, another agency, if we want to, but that does give us the position that we have to do some monitoring of their activities to make sure that they're spending the funds in compliance with all the grant requirements. So we can move that direction. We just have to be extra careful when we start doing that.
But I think there are opportunities as we go, you know, past this initial, these are the things I know we can do now list, which is partly what we're talking about tonight, is as some of the other jurisdictions develop their plans, where that leverage can happen. But I think it's too early in everybody's process for committing to those. And this task force, again, will be having those conversations, I imagine, at our meeting in March.
That would be correct. I'll go to the next slide and talk about the next steps for us. This might put a little things better perspective for us. Tonight, if we identify projects we want to move forward with, I will come back to the City Council with a formal budget, supplemental budget request. And that'll probably be at the second meeting in November, just because we've missed the deadline to do any kind of public notice at this point for the next meeting. And so I would come back at that point and say, okay, City Council, this is the projects we talked about and the dollars that we think that it's going to entail. Can we move forward? And at that point, then if we get the go ahead, we can actually spend the money and start moving forward on things. I would anticipate with those projects, we would come back in February, March at the Long Range Planning Task Force meeting and give an update as far as how the projects are going, how the money's been spent, and then also an update during the budget committee meetings. During the Long Range Planning Task Force meeting and budget committee meetings, that would be the next opportunity for us to talk about the ARPA funds and start working through additional projects. And so I'd anticipate between now and then, probably a lot of the agencies and partners in the region will have a better feel for some of the projects they want to do and how we can collaborate with them. And we would keep that cycle going. Every long range planning meeting and budget committee meeting, we could bring this back up and do a budget to actual results of where we're at and where we're headed.
So as we were going through our conversation and that list, there were things that you were highlighting that are doable now. If Correct. The task force agrees that these are priorities that are appropriate for and in alignment with what we as a task force have identified, you know,
sure.
for resources.
Like, the things that I'd like to move forward with, if we can. And again, the police cadet radios, because I do feel like that's a safety issue. So that's about a $30,000 investment. The code enforcement truck, because I do think that that's somewhat of a safety issue. And that's about a $40,000 investment. We are looking at a hybrid type of vehicle, hybrid truck. So I think this would be a perfect example of someplace that it really does make some sense for the city to move to the electric direction. The other area would be the ADA street ramp improvements, just so that we can move forward with getting the street fund back on task. The hardware software for cybersecurity and protection of critical infrastructure, we have some gaps there that it'd be nice to get covered. And then on this page, we're looking at the police parking lot security fence, updating the touch pad there, and also the Meadows pump station. So those would be the projects that I would make my recommendation to bring forward at the next opportunity. So
what about codification of the ordinances?
That was, yeah.
I would love to move that one forward if you guys wanted to do that. I would not complain at all.
That's talking about transparency and accessibility to for every person in Kaiser to know what our rules, regulations are. I mean, this is all about, you know.
I suppose probably I don't have it on my list because we'll be circling back in a couple of months to be able to talk about this list again. But if you folks are moved to move that direction, we can definitely move it to the top of the pile.
See, my concern is just throwing this out there is right now the ordinances and the knowledge of the ordinances is largely in our city attorney's head and his assistant's head, and not that anything's going to happen to him, but if God forbid something did, we would be in a whole lot of trouble.
I would agree with you 100%.
This is it's not a huge dollar amount, but it's something that we desperately needed. It's going to make all of our rules and regulations much more accessible to every person in the community. And people can then do it themselves online. It's all part of that, if we want to make sure more things transition over to the to internet-based, this makes a whole lot of sense. I don't think, does anybody think that that's a terrible idea?
Yeah, well, I wanted to add something, if I may. I think it would be unbelievable if we had them also translated into Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did that, think about it. If English is not your native tongue, and you go onto the City of Keyser website to look at their ordinances, and you find out that they're in Spanish, I mean, I got to think that's going to attract those folks to, more of the Latinos to our community. Just my thought. But.
Well, and to build a trust relationship. I think it's absolutely a fabulous idea. Anybody think that's a terrible idea?
Nope.
Okay. Can we put a star by that one and
we can do that.
Councilor Herrera is laughing at me. I just want to say that he's laughing at me.
Fine. Beavers and ducks are agreeing. We have detente.
Yes.
And again, we will be circling back together in the February, March time period, which I can't believe it's almost the end of October. So just a couple of months away, we'll be.
Two things you didn't mention, and that was the backfill of the community center and gas tax revenues, just right back into the budget. Do they have to be related to projects, or can they just backfill the loss? Because you said that's about $2 million when you combine community center and gas tax. Community center, then staff come back with, this is what we need to do as we get this going again and add safety protocols in using our community center again, that sort of thing. But is that something you're talking about now, or is that going to come in the 22-23 budget conversation?
For the ARPA funds, we do have to identify how we're spending them. So we can't just dump them into the fund and say, here you go. I would almost say, to the extent that we could handle that during the budget process, it might be a little bit cleaner to say, here's some projects that we're backfilling that we need to take care of. Right now, I'll just leave it at that. I think that might make a little more sense to go through the budgeting process.
Is that true also of the payroll backfill that you're talking about with the police and public safety, like the two fire districts, that conversation?
Yep. That would be, if there's interest in moving forward with something like that, we would just need to reach out to the fire district and start having folks start to track their hours spent on COVID-related incidents. So we wouldn't necessarily need to do a budget adjustment for that right now. We could do that towards the end of the year.
Okay, and both fire districts, right? Because we've got Keyser Fire and Marion County.
That would be correct. Good catch.
So is that something we have to, that you would do as part of the 21-22 budget, or is that something you're going to figure out and come back later? I've thought about lost.
I would think that we'd probably want to come back, and if this is something that we want to do, we could talk at the February meeting, and then I would prepare a supplemental budget shortly thereafter.
Other input from task force members? I'm looking for raised hands, waving hands, jumping up and down, or other means of getting my attention.
If you do have additional ideas, please make sure to get a hold of me, and we can put them on a parking lot somewhere and talk about them at our next get together.
Madam Mayor.
Council Herrera.
Did I interrupt somebody?
No,
I appreciate Councilor Day's comment, but to me it's a no-brainer. But you know, when we started off our meeting, this meeting, we talked about the changing demographics that in our great presentation by the young lady, I can't remember her name, but and I hope we continue to keep that in mind as we move forward, because the task force or whatever, keep it in mind like we're doing. That you know, the demographic things are changing and the city's changing, and so I'm you know, all our decisions got to be based on some of that. Earlier we even Chris talked about having a position to help in that capacity, and when we talk about diversity, equity, inclusion, I want that to be considered as a maybe not as important as a librarian, but you know, something that we have to think ahead, have a vision as we move forward, because I see that, I mean, obviously, when we started saying the demographics changing, it's going to change even more. Diversity is here to stay. And so we got to think in those ways as far as who's on it or who's planning this and why we're, you know, ready for that change and moving forward with our city. But, you know, I really appreciate all the work that's been in there, Tim, especially with the group that we put together with Elizabeth and I and Councilor Reed. So that's my comment, but I really like what's going on, and I hope we continue doing that with that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Susan, you had your hand up. Right? Susan London? I can't hear you. You're muted. Thank you, Michelle. Not yet.
Okay. This is my first meeting. I'm the newest member on the budget committee. And I hope there's time for a learning curve, because there's an awful lot to know if I'm going to be able to do any help.
Well, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
And this whole thing with ARPA is a steep curve for all of us. So I would definitely encourage you to set up time to meet with Tim and get to know our budget with him. He is fabulous. And I would encourage all new budget members to meet with him when you get a chance to learn about our budgeting process and you know, start that ramp up. That is a point well taken, and we're real glad to have you here.
Thank you.
And Councilor Herrera, I didn't remember the name of our GIS person is Sue Rensing. And they did a great job. Really happy to have that very powerful skill set in our city staff.
I was very impressed. And I will say this to Susan. Tim does a great job of explaining. Believe me, I've been on this for a long time, senior counselor, and boy, I'm still learning. Trust me, Susan. Well, welcome aboard.
I'm excited.
This is where you really get some meat and potatoes going on, so for sure. Any other questions?
Making of the sausage.
Yes. I appreciate all of you taking time out of your day. I know it's a little bit of a short notice, but I'm very appreciative of the time that all of you have spent getting together and talking about some of this stuff. So.
And then, Councilor Day?
Are we making a motion, or is that what we have to do, or is it no?
No.
I would like to make a motion that if we have anything that needs to get done, that we assign it to Shannon Johnson, because he wasn't here tonight.
Second.
Oh, that's right. Task forces can make motions and so forth. There's work sessions that can't. Boy, Shannon's going to really be sorry.
He's listening to You've Got a Friend.
Yep. I know it'll be a team effort. I see that Mr. Hare, our interim city manager, is on. So I know that all of the staff will be meeting tomorrow to sort things out and bring back very comprehensive information back to the task force and to the council. And I really appreciate that. So any other closing thoughts from task force members? Ali Rasuli.
Are we meeting again to finalize any choices, or is that going to the council?
Kim?
At this point, I feel like I have the consensus that we can move forward with the items we talked about. So the next step for these ones will be putting together a supplemental budget request for the city council to get their approval. Then we'll move forward with those projects. We will meet again in February, March, at which time I can give you an update as far as what we've moved forward with and the status of any future projects that we want to do.
All right, thank you.
And I think you have on in the packet this evening is the date for the next task force meeting. And I'm trying to scroll up to see what page that was on. But I think it was in March. Scrolling. Other business. So we have dates for the minutes from last year. Huh. My bad. Do we have a date yet for the Long Range Planning Task Force? It'll be in March, right?
I believe it'll be Monday, March 14th.
Okay, I did see that somewhere. So mark your calendars now for that. And if we need one in between, we will be reaching out to all of you. Not the whole list, just the asterisk, the items are the ones that will be coming to the city council for the supplemental budget. That's right. That's why Tim went down the list of the ones that are specific for the 21-22 budget cycle, which is one we're in now. And then the ideas or concepts that aren't ready for prime time, but need to be discussed in the 22-23 budget cycle or going forward. That is what we'll discuss as the Long Range Planning Task Force on March 14th and other times as necessary. Does that help clarify that for everybody? Okay. So we had to have the can do it now and the let's plan this out for the next couple of years, because we want to make sure we don't leave a single scrap on the table. Then we say, ooh, you didn't obligate that. We don't leave scraps at all. All right, anything else for the good of the order? Task force members, staff members. All right, thank you all very much for, do I have one? Oh, then the time is 7:35 and we are adjourned. Thanks everybody.
Go Bees.
Great, thank you.
Go Ducks.
Love it.
All right.